Welcome, everybody, to The Rad Life, the only talk radio show that takes you along with host and age explorer Rod Gontos on his continuing journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older. The Rad Life is brought to you this week by Your Home for a Lifetime, a company dedicated to empowering you to stay safely, independently, and comfortably in your own home. And now here is your host, Rad Gontos.
So, Paul, when is St. Patty's Day again?
Friday.
So I guess how do you celebrate 2 years of being on the air or near St. Patty's Day?
We got to get drunk.
We have a bit of Murphy's Law going
on so.
Here, and so we had technical difficulties, and I apologize for our guests, who I understand are on the line with us.
Yes, they are. Welcome. Let's start with Leonard. Hey, Leonard.
Hey, how are you doing, Rod?
I'm good, and Leonard, thank you. You're joining us on Skype, so for the people that usually join us on YouTube, we will not have the show this week on YouTube. We will have it on octalkradio.net. People can press the listen live button. So if you or Mari want to put that out to anybody, I did post it on social media earlier. That is the place where people can listen to us. And I, again, apologize for having technical difficulties, but thanks to the master blaster, Paul.
We figured it
Robert's
out.
Robert's there. He figured it out. So why don't you guys introduce yourselves? Let's get started with that.
Or say hi to the second guest.
Mari, say hello, too. Yeah.
Hi. Hello there.
All right. And where are you joining us from, Mari, today?
I'm from Laguna Niguel.
So Laguna Niguel and Dana Point in the house. why don't you guys introduce yourself, give a little bit of background. Mari, if you want to start off.
Yes, I've been an attorney mediator for 30 years, and I have seen every kind of conflict that there is between people divorcing, and just so happens that the majority of the cases I have are people over 50.
Hmm.
So I even had a case where someone was married 50 years and then decided to divorce. So this is really an issue that affects all of us seniors.
And thank you for sort of starting us off on that note. I do want to come back to that.
Can I interrupt one second, though?
Well, hold on a second.
I just want to interrupt one thing.
Okay.
I want to thank her because she said us seniors, but I want her to know that that doesn't include Rod.
Okay,
no,
so
it includes Leonard and I.
me. So in case Mari, I know Leonard has had the fortune or misfortune to spend a few minutes with Paul earlier today, but
just want to point that out.
That is Mr. Paul Roberts, who basically wants to claim the mantle of baby boomer and
keeps
calling me a baby boomer wannabe.
That's
because
right. I'm the poster child for this movement. He's just a wannabe.
Okay.
So I appreciate you wise folk being here, seasoned professionals. But I do appreciate you bringing that up, Mari, because I know you guys have co-authored a book, and we want to talk about that. But being that the show is sort of baby boomer focused, not only from your perspectives as people that are, you know, active adults, baby boomer, representing that sort of continuing to contribute to and give of yourselves in the form of like the book and what you guys do professionally, but that also as a demographic, there may be some particularities of what conflict looks like and feels like and what causes it in that age.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say that there's some things that maybe we want to basically make sure to cover today as well, if that's okay with you guys?
Yes, sure. That'll be fine.
I just want you
to introduce Leonard.
Oh, yeah. Leonard, let's introduce Leonard. All right. Hey, Leonard. All right. So what's your background?
well, I've been a silent psychotherapist
I like that.
I've been a psychotherapist for about 40 years, and I worked both in Australia and in America. So I was a director of a marriage and family therapy program when I lived in Australia. And then in Chicago is also affiliated with the Northwestern University. And Mari and I have been working on this book. Oh, geez, Mari and I, we started working on this book maybe 3 years ago. And what started out to be we thought we just threw our information together because Mari is a mediation attorney. I'm a therapist.
Mm-hmm.
Coming from different perspectives, we always say Mari heals conflict from the outside in. I heal conflict from the inside out.
Mm-hmm.
It was a really good mix and match for, like, the yin and the yang for both of us to get together.
And how long ago was that?
I would say about 3 years ago we started working on the book.
Let's address that as, you know, sort of author writing a book. Had you guys published before?
This is my basically fifth book, the first book that I co-authored with someone. Okay. And Mari, you published quite a few books too.
Yes, and mine were all nonfiction, and Leonard is a great novelist, so it was a kind, and he's also done a little bit nonfiction as well.
Right.
So we both have been authors, but we hadn't worked together except mm-hmm. where we had done workshops on conflict resolution. So we said, oh, this is an opportunity for us to really share these skills that we have.
So, and the books that you've written before, were they on similar topics, or was this a different departure for you guys?
Yeah, this was a different departure for me. Mostly I wrote about negotiations uh-huh. and privacy, you know, being the lawyer in me.
Yeah.
So this was blending those skills with really the skills of conflict resolution, which is my expertise.
And Leonard, had you written like with an attorney when you have collaborated before?
No, Maury's the first person I've actually co-authored with. I have two novels that are basically satires on psychotherapy. It's kind of a lighthearted spoof.
I like this guy already. I'm going to have to get these books.
Yeah.
They're fun.
Satire, sarcasm is languages we speak very well on this show.
Very well. you're versed in both.
And he's down the street from me, so I might just have to have like a book club or something with him. That's great. So. What was the experience like for you guys? I mean, you obviously knew each other. You had maybe spoken at different things. You kind of ran in the same circles. Here you are deciding 3 years ago to write this book. It's an interesting title that you guys have for the book, I think. And so what was the catalyst? What said, hey, let's write a book?
Well, let's first give the title so you get an idea. It's called Fighting for Love, Turn Conflict into Intimacy. It's a couple's guide.
Talk about satire right there, Leonard, right? On so many levels. I mean, I need a knife to cut through that.
Yeah, it sounds like an oxymoron, right?
Twice over, actually. Yes.
Get a kick out of this. We wanted to call it The Gift of Conflict, but everybody hated that title. They go, who wants a gift of conflict?
The gift of conflict, yeah.
Conflict, right?
Hey, honey, I got you some conflict for your birthday.
What a gift.
What a gift. What a guy.
No, but it's interesting because what seems at the surface to be kind of a twisted kind of, you know, oxymoron of a title, the way you guys approach it, actually, it makes perfect sense, right, as people delve into the book. So, but was that title something that just jumped at you at the very beginning? Is it something that just evolved and developed as you guys were working on the book? What happened?
Yeah, well, we realized that the... go ahead, Leonard.
I was going to say, Amari and I, when we were doing our workshops, the original title was The Gift of Conflict, but then we started sharing the title with other people and getting feedback. And mm-hmm. as Mari said, people didn't want The Gift of Conflict. And so we started tweaking the title a bit more. And eventually Mari's son, who's into advertising, came up with the title, Fighting for Love.
Yeah.
Very cool. So you guys already had sort of the direction, right? You knew where you kind of were going with the book. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So that was cool. So that was a nice way to kind of put a nice little ribbon on it. And and how long did it take to write the book?
It took us about 2 years, right, Leonard?
It was about 2 years. Originally, we were going to just put together an e-book, but then as we started writing it, we realized that it had to expand. Plus, Mari and I have our own unique writing style. So I think one of the big things, we had to fight for love in the way we wrote our book. We had to make sure that, you know, it took time as we developed our writing relationship to incorporate both of our styles and find a voice that both of us were happy with.
Is it different when you're collaborating, Leonard?
Oh, yes, absolutely. When I'm writing a book alone, whether it's a novel or nonfiction, it's my voice. I just I basically go through my own particular thought process in putting the words on the paper. But in collaborating with another person and with Mari, we both have our ideas as to how we want to go, and we have our different unique voices. And mm-hmm. so part of it is working to merge these two together into a very readable book. And I'm really very pleased. I mean, we had a struggle at times, but on the whole, very happy with the product and how it all came out.
Well, and that's what I was going to ask you. Now that you've gone through this, now that you've fought for the book, you know, would you because again, you know, this in its own way is a relationship that evolved, right? I mean, it's a 3-year relationship specifically around this particular task, maybe, but you guys probably interacted with one another in a different manner that you had never done before.
Exactly. We had to learn to walk our talk.
Uh-huh.
And so we have challenges, and we really did use the skills that we teach in here about really, you know, the act of listening to each other, really pausing and do what I call solutioneering. So as we went through the book, you know, we learned from each other because he came from the psychotherapy background, and mm-hmm. I came from, you know, this solutioneering, the problem solving,
right.
the mediation background. So we taught each other so much during the process. And then, of course, the fun part was that we practiced with our loved ones, too. So my poor husband had to be the guinea pig, and his, you know, his sweetheart at the time had to be a guinea pig. And we both lived through each chapter, whether it was on needs or on boundaries or whatever it was, we were practicing. And for me, it was incredible because my husband even told Leonard and thanked him because it really gave us that greater intimacy and passion after writing the book. So I'm a great example.
Okay, Paul has a question.
So we got the book out. Why are old people, the gray panthers out there, getting divorced in such record numbers? And am I correct what I've heard, that the two largest points that people get divorced are either a couple years into their marriage, this isn't working, or the opposite end of the spectrum, 20, 30 years of marriage, and they finally go, why are we together? The kids are gone, and I don't even know why we're together anymore.
And let me just add this as a sort of a non-gray, did you say gray panther?
Gray panther,
okay.
I like that term.
As a non-gray panther, can
gray.
I be a gray cub?
You're
okay,
gray cub.
Okay. Right. But a non-gray panther, looking from the outside, is this something that is indicative of this particular generation that has experienced a higher divorce rate, for example, or, you know, because there's other things, like there's societal acceptance, for example, and things of that nature. So,
right.
or is this a phenomenon that's common that people like myself maybe will also go through, or is it something unique to this generation?
Or is it associated with the time of life because we never lived this long? When I said, I will, till death do us part.
You
I didn't
expected
know
death to be sooner?
Yeah. I think 40 years. Oh, my God. So talk to that. First of all, is that a correct assumption? This is a big phenomenon. This is a large, a danger point in life where a lot of people get divorced.
Well, let me just put this in perspective. If you look at marriage these days, the very first several years, usually there's a spike. There can be a spike in divorce because usually in the first 7 years, that's usually when the spike begins to occur. A couple gets together, they're working through this process of living together, and are they going to be really compatible? So there's often a spike of divorce in those within the first 7 years, and then later on, at the end, where when the children, we know that when the children leave away and the empty nest occurs, mm-hmm. then the couple has to recalibrate. They have to say,
right.
Well, oh my goodness, if we had children, we raised our children, do we want to spend the rest of our lives together?
Well, and my definition of myself and how I see myself in the context of my surroundings is no longer possibly primarily parent, right? Now at this point,
yes.
So this sort of paradigm shifts moments.
Right, because you have for a long degree focused on the kids more than on the relationship. I would say that I had struggled that same thing in my life here. Suddenly you look at each other. When you're starting off, it's just the two of you. Generally, and then a baby comes along somewhere along the way if you follow the traditional pattern. But then for many years, it's about the struggle of building a career and building a home and building a family, and the kids become such a focus of all that, and it's all the attention is focused in on them. And then they leave, and suddenly you're looking at you thinking, who is this person I'm with?
Yeah, that's exactly it, because you've been, you know, a mom or a dad, and you have that identity, mm-hmm. and now you're kind of wondering, who am I?
Right.
And it's more really important if you know who you are and what you want, and sometimes what you want isn't what you wanted when you were 20 years old.
Right, it changes, right? I mean, you change.
You didn't
right.
know what
yeah.
you wanted when yeah. you were 20. I mean, now I tell people, hey, you know what works for you, you know what doesn't, you know, write a list of what you want in a relationship. Most people weren't taught to do that. Us baby boomers were not taught to do that.
So again, I'll ask this question. I will say this, which I've said to Paul before, and I think he was a little taken aback by when I first said it, is that I do want to thank you guys that are baby boomers for basically making it okay, like for blazing the trail, if you will, through these acceptable societal things, through things that, you know, not having to pursue a traditional career path, for example, being able to do something that's maybe, you know, make a living, you know, out of a creative path or something that's out of the ordinary. Because for my generation, and yes, we are a small bridge generation called Gen Xers, but even so also for the millennials, those steps that you guys, those foundations that you guys set in place, whether instinctively or on purpose, really make it a lot easier for us. And so is this thing with regarding divorce and conflict in relationship, I mean, all relationships are,
you know,
just
one of the things we made,
right?
Easier for you,
what
is, you cannot get divorced. When I was a kid growing up, divorce was taboo. You were
that's exactly what I'm saying.
Not only was it legally hard to do, but it was society frowned on you if you were a divorced person. We were the first generation that came along and said, you know, we want to restart. This isn't working. I want to restart. My career isn't working. I want to restart. My life isn't working. I want to restart.
Right, but you guys were still, I think, from looking on the outside, you were still saddled with sort of a traditional relationship structure. That you were.
Well, we didn't live together or something. We pioneered that too.
Exactly. So for younger generations, there's a little bit more options about how you basically have a relationship with somebody, right? Right or wrong, moral, immoral, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
And so I'm just trying to identify whether, when we talk about baby boomers being, 50% of baby boomers are divorced, is that something unique to baby boomers because of just the path that society has taken?
I think it's more than just the path. I think it's just we're of the age where we were into that consciousness raising. Remember, we were the children that grew up and protested the, you know, Vietnam War.
Yeah, right.
We were always, you know, like looking for higher consciousness. I remember I became a meditator in college. That was very big, and that whole generation. So we're looking for consciousness. And I think conscious marriage, conscious divorce, all that is really part of our generation, is looking it within to figure out what's right. Now, I just went in October with 7 couples and took them, and they were all baby boomers, okay? Mm-hmm. And took them on a romance retreat to Puerto Vallarta. And you know what? It was wonderful because they were all baby boomers without kids anymore. The kids were grown, and they wanted to fall in love again, and we did. So that can happen too if you look at yourself and see what do I want and how can I get that with my partner.
But am I right in assuming that part of this has to do with the longevity of our lives too? Again, when my parents said, till death do us part, they died in their 60s generally.
You have an opportunity to see life beyond a certain point.
Yeah, where, so all of a sudden when you get to be 65 and the kids are gone, you're not just hanging on to each other and thinking, well, I guess I'll ride this out because, one, I got no other choice, and two, we need each other to support each other where I'm sick, she's sick, whatever. Somehow we've got this extra next chapter that we have a chance to do something with, and I think at that point people are standing back and saying, is this who I'm going to spend the rest of my life with, or are we on the same page? You want to go play, and I want to go do something meaningful.
Yeah, there's really three phases to the marriage. The first is just being with a partner.
Right.
That's just one phase of marriage. You know, some couples don't have children; they just spend life together.
Right.
And then the second phase, if you have children, that's a whole other phase of a relationship of a married couple. And then after the children are raised, the third phase is what do we do with the rest of our lives?
Yes.
So some couples can go all through those three phases together. Sometimes couples are not. Sometimes they're just meant to be together. Without children, sometimes once their parenting is finished, sometimes they choose to go. I know I was married 26 years, and after 26 years, Mary Lou and I parted ways. Our children were into college, and our paths just diverged or had gone very separately, and so we elected to go our separate ways. So there are those three phases that couples have to manage these days.
And again, I'm the poster child of baby boomers, so I always share my own personal experience. I will say, I've never said this publicly, but there were probably three times I've been together with Jan, my wife partner here. It'll be 30 years next month here, okay? I would say there were three crisis periods in our marriage where
there might be another one when you get home after
she doesn't listen to you, so I'm not. And
what? She doesn't listen to my show? No. Okay.
She doesn't listen to me. So three periods, really, honestly and truly, where we really almost broke up or really talked about it. One was in that first couple of years. Gee, we were in love, but when we got together, we started living together, and it was like, wow, you do this and I do this. I can't stand this. This is going to drive me crazy. And vice versa and everything. So there were some rough periods those first couple of years. Then we settled in. Very happy, very close, and then late in the relationship decided to adopt and have children, a child. That created such conflict between us because, you mean you believe this? We had such totally different parenting styles. We had never discussed it or thought about it, and it caused a lot of conflict to the point where almost made us break up. Then we worked through that, got very happy again, successfully raised a child. Now we're grandparents, and life's wonderful. And all of a sudden, we're looking at each other going, who are you? And more importantly, you know, right now, part of me wants to move out to the desert and do some of those things. She's like, I'm never going there. Ain't going to happen. And I'm like, well, I'm not sure I want to stay here forever. And all of a sudden, there's a conflict here again that we're trying to work out.
So that's the perfect segue.
Yes.
You know, you're a pain in the you-know-what.
But
you know,
I do
come through, right. And so let me ask, you know, so why should we fight for love?
Okay.
Just give up, huh?
Well,
love means fight against anything that gets in the way of you getting the love you want. That's what we mean by that, is that there are our own issues that get in the way of us connecting with each other. So that's pretty much.
So Mari, let's just use Paul as the guinea pig that he just offered himself up to be, right? So what would you say to Paul in a situation like this? He's obviously dealing with this sort of, it's very, very now for him, right? Would you say, Paul?
Yeah.
Something that you're...
And I'll back up and say that we only survived 30 years because we both decided the relationship was worth fighting for. We could have easily said, you know what? Where this isn't working, let's just go somewhere. And many of our friends did at each of those phases in our lives. But there was something there about what we had and the commitment and what we'd built and the feeling we had for each other, but this thing that we'd committed to was worth fighting for.
Yes. And so what you had was an intention, and that intention is really important because if you have an intention, you can make it work.
Yes.
The other thing is we have, in one of our chapters, we call it hard love, solutioneering, and that's where you have to actually learn to negotiate with each other.
Mm.
So you want to be in the desert and you want to do all these fun things, and she goes, no, I don't want to go there. So maybe you're going to have to find some ways where you can get what your needs are, get those met, and she will get her needs met. It's a process, it's a dance of working it out, and when you do, when that conflict is there for a reason, because there's something that's missing that you need,
mm-hmm.
and there's something that she needs, that is your opportunity to grow.
Yes.
That's your opportunity for a new creation, for mm-hmm. a way to get together. So that's what I would say, hard love, which is working through the process.
So what are, I know that you guys have listed like six basic needs in any relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't you guys take us through
that?
What are
those
six basic needs?
Okay. Break it down.
All right. First of all, if you're not getting these six needs met, and I'm going to have Leonard join in on this, but if you don't get these met, you're not going to be happy. I can tell you right now.
All right, I got my pen out. I'm going to see how many I check off here. All right.
Okay. we call them the six A's of basic needs of every loving relationship, whether it's with your kids or your loved one.
Okay.
First one is attention.
Hmm.
If you're talking and your wife is doing something else and she doesn't listen to you, you're going to feel very neglected, rejected, and mm-hmm. obviously that's painful. Number two, acceptance. To love each other for who you really are without trying to change that person to be a different person.
Boy, isn't that... There was a play a few years ago that ran up in Hollywood, and it was called You're Perfect, Now Change.
Yeah, right. Perfect, Now Change.
Yes, exactly.
Mari and Leonard, let me ask you this about relevant to that specific thing. Do you think that over, like, as people get older, do you think their relationships, excuse me, that start later in life benefit from that? I mean, is it automatic that as somebody gets older, they get a little bit more in tune with themselves? Or is it sometimes that it doesn't really matter what your age is, you have to take the time to get to know yourself?
Good question.
I
think the first thing is acceptance, is we just accepting ourselves first off. So I think it is very important that The acceptance is something. So really accepting our emotions, our feelings, our thoughts, our needs, our desires. And over time, we, as we age, we start getting more comfortable with ourselves and accepting ourselves, even accepting our flaws. Mm-hmm. And if you're in a relationship, a longer-term relationship, and the other partner also learns to accept, okay, this is my partner, there's some things I'm not going to change, mm-hmm. and some things that I may negotiate. There's a greater acceptance about what they can and cannot do.
I think you mentioned also our shortcomings, which is something that I think I'll speak from my own personal experience. I think that, to me, was the biggest challenge, because I think you have to kind of accept the fact that you're not as great as you think. But but going through that challenge, I think, and you know what they call, like, you know, the like brutal moral, you know, brutal inventory of yourself, kind of.
Yeah.
But I think that there is an other side to that you come out of. And that level of awareness is something that then basically you take with you, and I think benefits relationships that you get into, business relationships.
We went through two, attention. I've certainly been accused of, she'd say something and I'll say, huh? She'd say, you weren't listening, were you? Yeah, I was. You know.
But that's just marriage deafness,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Just yada, 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 yada. Well, yeah, I see her lips are moving and I'm watching the show. Uh-huh, that's nice. Uh-huh, that's great.
So what about after acceptance, what do we have?
Let me just go back.
Yeah.
You don't want to get complacent. You know, when you get older and you just get complacent, all that, you know, that's the way he is. However, you can get more mellow. I know there's certain things about my husband that are very different than me that I finally just say, you know what, that's him.
Mm-hmm.
That's just him. And I noticed my parents who worked together for 50 years, and they both died in their 80s. But after, they used to fight a lot when they were working together in their store. However, when they retired, they got really mellow. They held hands together all the time. Yeah, so it's when you get to that point where you're consciously accepting the other person. So we did attention, acceptance.
Right.
And another one is appreciation. Leonard, why don't you talk to that one?
And you know, the appreciation, we're really expressing an attitude of gratitude frequently. We're really appreciating the other person. They've done studies on couples, and the studies show that couples that thrive have a ratio of 5 positives to 1 negative. So that's 5 acts of appreciation or statements versus 1 negative. And I always think of it this way. If someone gives me a dollar and takes away a dollar, I'm going to have 0.
Right.
But we do have a more of a negativity bias. We tend to react more to negativity than to positivity. That's why in relationships, appreciation, it's necessary to have it 5 to 1.
It's funny, you know, we're so busy, you could almost argue that the only time we pay attention was something is likely to go wrong.
Yeah,
and yet that's the reactive side of things, versus what you're talking about is the proactive side, the awareness of that attitude of gratitude. I mean, you have to have a consciousness. This is something that you want to have your life reflect and echo.
So if I'm going to go home tonight,
it doesn't happen accidentally, is what I'm saying.
About Leonard, something that she did that upset me. I'm simmering on it all day here today here. Then I got to give 5 good things before I give the 1 bad thing?
No.
Well, you know what you can do? I always think of the Oreo cookie. So let's say...
Don't go home.
So, Paul, you go home and say, boy, am I so grateful that you're in my life. And say, oh, by the way, you know, when this happened, it really upset me. But I'm so glad that we're able to work this out. And I'd like to share a story. There's an older couple, and I remember the wife was always complaining that her husband, when he ate bagels, would get poppy seeds on the kitchen floor.
Yes.
So she was complaining all the time about the poppy seeds on the kitchen floor.
That's
and then
big.
One day she woke up and says, you know, if I didn't see poppy seeds on the kitchen floor, it would mean that my husband wasn't alive.
Ooh.
So it was kind of a change of mind. Says, wow, thank God I've got poppy seeds on the floor.
He's still alive.
My husband's there.
That old slob is still alive. Okay, all right.
Right. And when you go home tonight, instead of saying something that you're upset about, you can say, you know, I would really appreciate in the future if you would do this. This was kind of disconcerting to me, but I would be really grateful if you would do this. And I do that with my husband all the time. Instead of complaining if he doesn't put the toilet seat down or whatever, I just say, I would be really grateful if you would do this. And you'd be surprised how much of a change you'll get when you do ask for what you want instead of what you don't.
And words and attitude mean everything, right? I mean, when you're when you are consciously communicating from a position versus just being engaged in a conflict, conflict, you actually have a little bit more empowerment, a little bit more control over the outcome that you may want. And if you lose focus on the fact that the outcome is resolution versus just venting.
Right.
Right.
I mean, right. No, venting is okay if you tell your partner
I'm venting.
I just need to vent. You hear me out for 5-10 minutes?
Right.
But if you just start venting just for the sake of venting, then that's a very quick way to spiral into a downward blaming and counter blaming each other.
I couldn't agree with you guys more. Yeah, I couldn't agree with you guys more.
I want to say something that is a very good trick that I tell my clients, and that's this. Whenever you use the word you with something negative, it's going to escalate the conflict. When you use you with something positive, like you're beautiful, you're wonderful, you're amazing, then it's going to give you Browning points. But instead of doing the you statements, you just say, you know, I need this. Instead of you didn't do this, you could say, I need this. I need you to get home on time so I can do this. Instead of you never arrive home on time, you know, that's the difference.
Rod and Paul, you two are amazing. You two just are amazing.
Yeah, yes, but that's only because you're
Book
not.
Him again.
That's only because you're not in the radio station.
Book him again.
You'd have a totally different attitude if you were here. We're going to take a break, guys. This is really very
important. We need to state what we need.
We're going to take a timeout right here, and then we'll be back.
All right.
Okay.
If you are like the majority of Americans, you want to continue living in a familiar environment throughout your maturing years. In fact, according to many surveys, 82% of homeowners overwhelmingly prefer to age in place, which means living in their current homes safely, independently, and comfortably, regardless of age or ability level. With over 30 years of combined experience in residential, commercial, hospitality, and destination resorts fields, Your Home for a Lifetime is a company dedicated to empowering you to maintain your quality of life and independence by helping you make your house your home for a lifetime. Do you want to reorganize or remodel your home? Do you want to add a full bathroom and possibly a bedroom on the main floor? Are you looking to make your kitchen more functional? Is an aging parent moving in, or your child is moving out, or even moving back in? Call Your Home for a Lifetime at 949-492-1872 or check them out on the web at yourhomeforalifetime.com and find out how they can help you make your house your home for a lifetime.
All right. So we're back. I know you guys have been very patient with us today, and I appreciate you again, you know, dealing with our technical difficulties. I don't want to hold you guys up too long, so I think we'll just go to about 1:15, 1:20, depending on how the conversation goes. If that works for you guys, I just want to make sure it's
perfect.
Okay.
Thanks very much.
Okay.
Yeah, I have my own radio show. I don't know if you know that, but
I do
have an interview at 1:30. So.
No, I totally do. And so again, you know, thank you for being patient with us and generous with your time. So okay, so we haven't gone through all of the six, I think, Mary, have we?
No.
Okay.
It's Mari. No.
Halfway through.
We got two more. We did it. No, three more. Affection. Right. This is a biggie.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We all need affection. It doesn't matter how old you are. You need affection. You need to be held. You need sex, even as you're older. Maybe not in the same way that you did when you were in your 20s, but you do. You need that skin-to-skin connection.
Right.
And just, you know, a kiss, a hug, holding hands, like I told you, my parents would hold hands together. It's
right.
So cute when you see an elderly couple
come in
and they're just, you know, hugging each other. It's beautiful.
Right.
It's the glue that binds.
Okay.
And, you know, the glue is also chemicals. So the affection, I mean, increases oxytocin, serotonin, testosterone, dopamine. All these chemicals are flowing. They're being created in our brain as we increase our affection. So you hear people are madly in love, it's because the chemicals are really flowing in the relationship.
Well, do you think that we're at a higher danger and risk these days because of the phenomenon of everybody being in contact but not really being connected?
You know, people get onto their cell phones. Now, obviously, cell phones are terrific and technology is terrific,
right.
But obviously, the lack of physical contact, face-to-face contact,
right,
can really prevent us from really having deeper connections. So I think that is a challenge of the younger generation.
Because what I was going to say, there's sort of the impression that I am in contact and connected, but the depth of that connection is not there, mm-hmm. and not in the way that I believe actually we are, even to your point, Leonard, biologically programmed.
And in touch is so important. We all know that babies, you know, in orphanages that don't get touched mm-hmm. come out and many become violent, you know. Mm-hmm. This is such an important need. The human touch is critical, and especially if you want to hold a relationship together.
Right.
Otherwise, you're going to go out and, you know, people come to me and husband or wife is having an affair. And why? Because they didn't get that touch. They didn't get that effect.
I'm going to share something with you guys that I came across yesterday, actually. I don't know if you guys know, but my day job, if you will, is I'm a commercial interior designer, and we specialize in wellness centers and spas mostly, and we do some restaurants, but we have this, and I've been doing that since 98. Well, the trends came out for 2017 from the Global Wellness Initiative, and one of the things that was interesting for me is that in that, the discussion, now this is happening in the spa, I mean, when I say spa, not a jacuzzi, but a day spa or a wellness center or something of that nature.
Right.
There was a discussion about one of the trends that is very much a growing in importance and incorporation into these environments is mental health.
Right.
And as part of your regimen for wellness, right? And mm-hmm. so it's fascinating to hear this and have this discussion, because I think it is only going to be more and more needed. I remember years ago, it was sort of a phenomenon, but somebody actually started hug rooms, actually, in New York. We've talked about it before, where you basically, you're living in an urban center, you're not really connected to even your neighbor, you're on the go all the time, you really don't have any connection, deep connections, and people just started setting up these rooms where you would go basically spend an hour just hugging on each other.
Right.
Yeah, we definitely need the socialization. We need touch. People have pets. Pets often serve that need. I mean, mm-hmm. being with a pet, a dog or a cat, increases oxytocin. For the aged population, people get older and living alone, that is a concern, because if they live alone and isolated, mm-hmm. that really impacts them, because they're not getting the social stimulation mm-hmm. that we all need, because we're social animals.
Two left to go.
Okay. Allowance, where that means allowing, you know, that we allow each other to express as individuals. So if my husband wants to go hunting, and there's no way I would ever go hunting, mm-hmm. you know, I have to accept that and allow that. And, you know, so those are the kinds of things of if I want to do something and go to some kind of workshop, I would maybe like him to go, but he doesn't want to go. Just allowing me to express is who I am.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes you have one partner who says, no, you can't do that. And then you don't feel fulfilled. So each person has to be independent yet interdependent, but not codependent.
Say that again, because I think it's a very powerful thing, and I want people to just take that in. So share that again, please, Mari.
Okay, so what I'm saying is that each of us have our own ideas of what's important to us, what we want to do, how we want to fulfill our lives. So it's important to have some independence and some, you know, interdependence,
mm-hmm.
but not codependence. So that's what I was talking about.
And codependence, define that.
You're giving up who you are for the other person, and mm. then you're going to regret it later.
Well, there's resentment, right? Yes. That, especially if you hadn't really gotten in touch with who you really are, and that's starting to happen and evolve in that relationship, and now you're feeling you may be stifled, or that person is your focus of what's stifling you versus maybe looking at your own things. Yeah, no, I totally get it. And obviously we're talking in a very simplified manner here, but it is a complex situation and very unique to each couple or each relationship, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
How important is it to have equality? That's been a big buzzword in our generation.
And what does that really mean?
Well, for example, I'm thinking of my dad, who made all the money, and my mom, who stayed at home. And at some point, as I got to be older and needed her less, she needed a job. Not for the money, but for the feeling of doing something and contributing and self-worth. My dad fought that like, heck, I'm not having my wife work. You're home. But they had a marvelous relationship, and she just kept working on him and working on him. Finally, he gave in, and that really created, and eventually he retired and he was home all day and she was still worked. And that was a whole transition. And I see that happening in lots of couples, yeah.
Yeah, if I can comment on that. You know, I think in my generation, I saw a huge shift of roles. I mean, with the feminist movement and then men's reaction to that, it was a huge shift. And I think the bottom line is that how couples manage the roles. I mean, when my kids were born, I have a son 37, daughter 39. I had to write a letter to the hospital asking permission to be in the delivery room.
Yeah, right. Interesting.
And so, I mean, that's changed so much. And even when I took my children into the bathrooms, they didn't have change tables for infants.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the roles have changed considerably. And I think the key is how a couple basically work through these roles together so they're both compatible. So if one wants to stay home and look after the children, the other one's feels really good about going out in the workforce, that they can manage and negotiate with one another how to do those roles so that it works for the benefit of both partners.
Well, the other reason I ask is that for many years, women said, and I think justifiably so, that what kept people in bad relationships is the inequality of their economics. The woman had no money, had nothing. The man had everything. And if she left, what's she going to do? And now, clearly, most of us live in two income relationships, so I think that's less and less. But talk about that. I mean, that sort of equality of not just roles, but equality of income. Is that important? I mean, I know there are couples that still don't. But we hear about, we had somebody, who was the one that was in here about the abuse going on behind
affluence abuse.
Yeah, where the wife is trapped in a
kept spouse. Yeah.
Right. Well, I think they think that, but if you're married in the state since 1969, we have community property, so
right.
It doesn't matter who's earning what; it is community property. So if I get married and I'm earning all the money, when
right.
I get a divorce, unless I have a premarital agreement,
right.
when we split up, there is a division of community property. It's equalized.
Well, and what you point out with that too, Mari, is that there's a personal accountability factor. Right? In relationships, whether you are in them, and we were talking about this, is that there's a conscious, like Paul was saying, you stayed together because you had a consciousness that it was worth fighting for.
Yes.
That was a personal decision you guys did, and
right.
also then as a couple. Right, but that personal accountability. So in relationships, and I'm not saying that people are not abused, but I'm saying that even in relationships where you are on the receiving end, okay, there's a certain part of it that is also your part in it.
Right, you can't just be the victim. I'm not saying
that you maybe have the empowerment to break through that, but you should definitely maybe at some point have the ability to seek help in doing so.
So let me ask you this is my own personal feeling. Having been with someone now for 30 years through some rough times and some great times, I question the commitment of many younger couples today to make
you're just a crutchy old man.
No, I think they give up too easy and too quick.
Well, you know what's really sad? This Leonard and I talk about this all the time, and that's why we do the workshops and we have the book, is that people don't have the tools.
Mm.
If you don't have the right tools, you can't make the marriage work. So, you know, who taught us? Our parents, were they perfect? Or
right.
did we learn it in school? No.
Right.
So I think we need to educate people as to the tools of how do we communicate effectively? How do we show respect for each other? How do we help each other to get our needs met?
Yeah.
Whether it's attention or acceptance or appreciation and affection, allowance or assurance. How do we do that? And people don't know how to do it. And that's why we felt so committed and so passionate about teaching people how to do this so they can have a loving relationship.
Okay, before we get further, let's give people a link to where the book is, where they can get it.
They can go to Amazon.com or they can go to our website, which is fightingforlovenow.com. That's fightingforlovenow.com. You can go to our website, and there's resources there. There's some free videos and handouts that they can go to. Or if they want to buy the book, they can just go to Amazon.com.
Okay.
And the name of the book is Fighting for Love, Turn Conflict into Intimacy, A Couple's Guide.
And the last one that you mentioned was assurance. Let's make sure we cover that one.
You have to feel safe in the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, when people come to me and they go, I don't trust my husband or I don't trust my wife. You know, they've been. And if you don't have assurances of safety, not only physically that they're not going to hurt you, But assurances that when they say they're going to do something, they're going to do it, mm-hmm. and that they're not going to fool around on you. Mm-hmm. Those are the kinds of things. If you don't have safety and that trust in that partner, that's not going to work. You have to have trust.
Well, you forgot the most important one in all the things that keeps good relationships together, and the other A, that's alcohol. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, that's maybe that's part of the assurance.
I have to tell you, I have a couple right now that alcohol is the reason for the divorce.
Yeah, well
assurance,
quite often,
assurance and allowance, right?
That's
he filed them under assurance and allowance.
I'm sorry, I just had to. Okay, that's what occurred to me. I'm Irish,
but I think it's the Irish gene playing out there.
I want to comment in that I think, as Mari was said, I think we're very passionate and committed to helping individuals fight for love, and that is our own tendency to shut down, to not be involved. You know, the key is for couples or individuals to be committed to learning how to communicate, learning how to break patterns that they learn from growing up. I think that's a challenge. And so people have been in longer-term relationships will go through many developmental changes. Mm-hmm. And really, as we age, we need more communication skills, not less communication skills. So our belief is that we need to be learning and expanding our brain, because as we age, our brain needs more stimulation. And so part of stimulation is continuing to learn new tools to communicate better.
Which is kind of in its own way fascinating, right? You're dealing with people that are getting older, and the sort of the standard acceptable is, as people get older, they get less diluted, you know, so basically they're, you know, I've learned everything I'm going to learn. And I think, again, for you guys, you know,
you shrink rather than grow.
But yeah. I think you guys as baby boomers, I think, again, are about to break through that barrier, because, you know, things like encore careers, you got more time. What am I going to do, go play golf for the rest of the next 15 years? So I think you're going to introduce this factor of relearning and reinventing at a later point in life, which other generations before you have not faced. It's interesting, because what you're saying, I think, Leonard, what I'm hearing is that learning is a continuous process, and it happens always. And reinventing yourself in a way by being open to receive new information, growth, personal growth, things around you, learning new skills, is something that we should be encouraged to do and actually find joy in pursuing, right?
And that relationships are continuing to grow. I mean, so that a really healthy, vibrant, conscious relationship is one where two people are continually growing. They don't just reach the point and says, okay, now we've finally arrived. It means that there's a vibrancy, there's an aliveness in which both are learning and curious about one another.
And would you agree, Leonard, that learning, that growth, is not just in the format of the relationship as a couple, but individually, which then brings that richness into this third entity
absolutely.
As a couple?
Okay, absolutely.
Right. But what about then?
Windows open, fresh air coming in, so it's you're breathing new energy into the relationship. Because as we age, we do need to continue learning. All the studies show that, you know, in addition to exercise, our brain has to be active and learning and taking in new things.
Right, you're doing yourself a favor by doing that, by keeping into your brain basically active like that, avoiding off a whole bunch of stuff that could come if you don't.
But I got to be the voice of doom here. What if that growth takes you in two different paths? What if you grow apart?
Let me just say to that is that the point is, as we're together a long time and we communicate effectively, we help each other to evolve. We learn from each other.
Right.
So it goes back to, well, if we go in two different paths, we can still come back together.
Right.
So if I want to do something that's very different from my spouse, okay, then he can do what he wants, but we come back together and we share those. We're here to be mirrors for each other, to evolve together, to help each other grow. And so if you're in a loving relationship, that gets better and better as you get older.
Well, and Paul, you're assuming that because somebody basically pursues something off the beaten path, that is something that's going to be resisted by the other person. And yet the other possibility is that it could open the path for that person who's following to actually follow,
if they're open to it,
right? But that's the point. It's how you begin to take that in. If you're taking that in, if that person is pursuing something else, it's a challenge. It's a worry. It's something that potentially could undermine my safety. Then there's something else going on, possibly.
That's
not
true.
That.
Right.
So let's talk about. Let's take a minute, Leonard, if you don't mind, or
last
whoever
couple
wants
minutes,
to do that.
Sir.
But let's talk about boundaries and forgiveness and the importance of that.
Well, you know, let's share. I'll jump in with forgiveness because that's kind of a key element
right.
that I see in all relations. When I work with couples in counseling, there may be transgressions, there may be difficulties, problems, and resentments, and I think that the lack of forgiveness really keeps couples from moving towards intimacy. So the forgiveness is so necessary to be able to let go.
Mm-hmm.
And so even if you feel like your partner has really hurt you badly, you still have to learn how to let that go. So if I get bitten by a rattlesnake, if I hold on to the poison,
right.
that's not helping me. I do have to have forgiveness that's letting go so that I can release it. That's so important in relationships.
And you forgive not for that other person. You forgive for yourself so that you don't carry around all of that baggage and you're not chained to the past. And
amen. It,
yeah, that's the bad
thing. You read my mind, Mari. I was going to, yeah, thank you for bringing that out. That you're giving to yourself when you do that, first and foremost.
Yeah, people forget that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, no, it's true. It's very true. So, you know, we've got a few more minutes, guys. What would you, what's the mess? What message would you guys want to leave our audience with?
Is love worth fighting for?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think the message that Mari and I always say is the only thing worth fighting for is love. And the love, I always think, especially in today's political climate, a lot of polarization, is that really looking for ways to create bridges and to combat, even in a relationship, the polarization. And to fight against my tendency to want to be right, to want to be in control, but it's really fighting against my tendency that prevents myself and from the people who I interact with from having the love and having this love connection.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
I just want to say, yeah, basically that what could be more rewarding in your life than to turn your conflict, which everyone has conflict, that's the way it is, to turn that conflict into genuine intimacy. That's the beauty. That's the gift that we talk about, is that that's the creating a whole new way of being together, because change is inevitable. So make that change something that you work on together. That's what I would say.
Well, you know, it's attitude, right? I mean, you can look at something as being a challenge, or you can look at it as being an opportunity. I'm not saying seek out conflict in order to be motivated to do something, but when
you
faced
don't have
by
to
that,
seek it out.
yeah, but when yeah, exactly, you don't have to seek it out; it'll find you. Right? but I mean, it's very stressful. Modern life is very stressful, and there's a lot of things that pull us in multiple directions. I think, again, if you're predisposed to. Well, let me rephrase that. If you have a consciousness that when you come across conflict or challenge, which is going to happen, that you look at it not in terms of something that is a burden that you just want to avoid like the plague, but maybe that it's an opportunity for either its growth or giving or something, that actually determines what you likely are going to end up with.
That's right. It is your opportunity for a much better relationship.
Paul's looking at me. He's like, he's not buying any of this,
there's
by the
purpose
way.
There's purpose to suffering? No.
I'd like to add a... this is one of my favorite poems.
Did I touch on a Catholic thing with you?
Yes. Right.
And he says, your task is not to seek for love, but merely to seek and find all the barriers you have built within yourself against it.
Hmm.
And I think that's so true, because if we really are not having love in our life, often we've built a barrier against.
Yeah, but you're making me do. You make me do personal work now, Leonard.
That. Come on.
That's the opportunity for you.
I know. He can't help it. He can't help himself. He's a therapist.
I wanted you to fix me. All right.
Well, you know, I'll tell you. We jokingly say that this show is Paul's therapy session.
Yes.
I think today we're probably closer to the truth than anything. So.
I'm going to go home and give her the gift of conflict tonight, boy. I'm ready.
Oh, gosh. Hopefully we'll be back on the air next week. Thank you both for being here. And let's give out that website one more time before we call it a show here.
Okay. www.fightingforlovenow.com.
fightingforlovenow.com.
And how can people reach you guys? I know you guys have individual websites as well.
Well, if they go to that website, that's the easiest way, because we're both on there and they can reach us from there. And the name of the book is Fighting for Love, Turn Conflict into Intimacy. They can get it on a Kindle, or they can get the regular soft copy at Amazon. Fighting for Love, Turn Conflict into Intimacy. Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much for being here. This was very enlightening and very enjoyable. Appreciate it. You guys have a great rest of the day. Have a great show, Mari.
Okay, thank you
very much. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You have been listening to the Rad Life Radio Show with your host and age explorer, Rad Gontos, brought to you on the one and only OCTalkRadio.net. Join us again next week as we continue our journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older.